change researcher, transdisciplinary collaborator, and advocate for commons, oriental social alternative. Jose has held academic teaching and research role at the National University of Singapore, Swinburne University, Queensland University, Victoria University, and Leuphana University in Germany. He is senior consulting editor of the Journal of Future Studies and a founder of consulting group Action Foresight. Jose has published over 30 peer-reviewed journal articles and reports in the area of futures, social innovations and enterprise, emerging challenges, strategy communication, sustainability, and organizational development. So please join me and welcome Jose.
Education for humans and dogs. I think that's also out of the box. So we're learning that we have been very anthropocentric as a species. So I think we need to include learning for other species as well. Maybe that can be also part of the experience of learning agenda. I am really excited about what Xufeng has created with her team, and I think it's the right time, and it's really exciting, and it really connects deeply with what I felt I was missing as a young boy, actually, because I learned in a box. I learned literally in a box, in a classroom, and what I needed to do was learn in the world, about the world. I needed to learn through a forest, about how that forest worked. Or I needed to learn in a workshop and see how that workshop functioned to create something. I needed to be embedded somewhere other than a box. So the call to arms that Xufeng and her team have put forward to embed learning experientially in the world, I think is incredibly powerful, and I believe in it. So I'm very, very excited to be here and to give a few ideas around the futures of education. So thank you for having me. So there's another reason why the metaphor of the box is a fitting way to describe the old vision for education and what we're coming from and what we might call a used future. I stole this from your website. So a used future, according to Professor Sahaya Nayatullah, is one where an old vision, even when it leads to more and more problems, continues to be used. We can think of it like the way that transport was thought of in the 1950s. We would have technology giving us ultimate transport solutions. And then those genius urban planners came up with this in Los Angeles. This is what I grew up in. And then all across Southeast Asia, they copied it. Say, well, what a great idea that is. And then they got that. So a used future is a future unconsciously adopted from one context into another, which shouldn't fit there, actually. People need to conceive of unique futures that are contextually specific, visions that work for who they are and where they are. So Sahaya Nayatullah asks, have you purchased a used future? Is your image of the future, your desired future, yours, or is it unconsciously borrowed from someone else? So I think the metaphor of the box describes the used future of education in a number of ways. And I'm going to stretch the metaphor. the educational setting is a giant box with people inside it. At universities, the box still rules. Our kids are also being educated in boxes. And even with new digital technology, we bring these technologies into a box. It's a functional unit. It allows segmentation. Each box has a grade or a theme. The box allows some organization, people or things that belong to that box for a certain amount of time. It fits a certain number of people. There's an administrative level of efficiency. We can get enough people in a box and give them education. The artifacts of the box are books, pencils, boards, AV equipment, and then the experience of the box. Again, you experience a book, a textbook, you experience seats with chairs. It's the experience of being in a box. It's hard to see when it's so deeply naturalized, when learning has been in a box all our lives from the beginning to now. And many people might say, don't knock the box. It's easy to take for granted. For many poor countries, people don't have adequate learning spaces. This is one of BRAC's classrooms in Bangladesh. And they create small pop-up elementary schools all over the country. And a great thing to do is to create shelter and structure for education. So there are limits to the metaphor. The metaphor also has less fortunate entailments. A sense of being stuck or confined, passive, receiving, as opposed to active and engaged. An inability to think unconventionally. Thinking inside the box is associated with conventional thinking. A lack of creativity, a lack of relationship with other dimensions. Relationships with other boxes, for example. Or the environment. Or a lack of experiential process and knowing. I remember when I moved to Japan at the age of 25, I got to experience, I did a homestay in Shimabara Prefecture in Kyushu, in the southern island, and I got to go into a high school to witness how education was being conducted. And we know that Japan has very high educational outcomes in many ways. But what I saw completely shocked me. It was imagine a room full of students on desks, looking forward, with the teacher instructing. And as I watched for the next 15 minutes, some of those students had their heads, their foreheads on the desk like this, because they were sleeping. It didn't bother anyone, by the way. And then some of them were looking. But then if you had time-lapse photography, what you would have seen is that the people who had their heads on the desk would slowly emerge from their slumber. And the ones that were awake would slowly go back to the desk, right? It was phenomenal. It was such an incredible image. I wish I had a camera. And everybody wanted my signature because they thought I was famous. That was really cool. The only time anyone's asked for my signature. All right. So the box, right, can be detrimental to our imagination. So the metaphor has its limits, and it's not fair to consign the totality of modern education to this metaphor. There are schools across the world that are, to a greater or lesser extent, doing amazing creative things with their boxes. Boxes have indeed served us very, very well. However, because of a number of important trends and emerging issues, we can anticipate that the nature of education learning is set to dramatically change in the coming years and decades. And importantly, it provides opportunities for out-of-the-box scenarios if we want to take them and create them, as Learning Agenda is doing. So I want to provide a space to imagine some of the new futures for education that are possible, that are out of the box. Citizen-driven, experience-based, peer-to-peer learning models, which help us address the great challenges that we face, that we all commonly share. Now, as an aside, this is not the only future of education. There are many, many futures of education, many scenarios and many visions for education itself. But education out of the box, the metaphor, and some of the trends and the emerging issues that I'm going to present, that's what excites me at the moment. Okay, so with that, I'll launch into the first major trend that I believe is driving this out-of-the-box scenario. So the first is really the emergence of a global knowledge commons. We all know about Wikipedia. It can be understood as the collective pool of knowledge that exists on the internet for anyone to access openly. Previously, this knowledge commons has been limited to information, such as through Wikipedia and the like. However, increasingly, the knowledge commons is transforming into a design commons. So, where am I? Okay, I missed it. Design commons, a process commons, a how-to commons. I like to call this a global learning laboratory. Now I can go to my slide. I believe we're in the era of global learning, a global learning experiment where humanity is facing a number of crises and challenges across the world. And across the world, people are developing innovative ways to solve our contemporary challenges as well. But these solutions are not limited to the local, because when people around the world learn about what one community is doing in an innovative way, other people can look at those experiments, and they can also use those experiments and apply them in their own locales. For example, we are experimenting at the moment with making our atmosphere warmer, whether we are doing it deliberately or intentionally or not. It is an experiment, a profound planetary experiment that could collectively blow up in our face. But it also coincides with thousands of experiments to solve that same problem, where we are all learning together. So we are in the age of the planetary experiment. We learn what it means to be a species with an impact on our planet. As well, what it means to take responsibility at a planetary level. So the implications for this are that learning is simultaneously about learning from the whole world, from our whole planetary existence, from our whole planetary dilemma. While at the same time, practice in instantiating learning at the local through experiential and experimental action-oriented learning, experimenting with how we live our lives locally. So, this is where I use a somewhat academic conjunction, cosmo-localization, which essentially argues that the global design commons, so we now have access to designs at our fingertips, designs for many different things, from printing 3D printed objects to even making cars. Tesla's made how much of it, but they've made the designs for their cars open. So the global design commons gives us new opportunities to instantiate production possibilities at the local level that previously were not possible. So there are many other industries that can be transformed this way. But it does require some mediation at the local level. So we have this new space of global knowledge and design, but then the question is, how do we actually instantiate this at the local? How do we make this something which is usable? So as Shufang was saying earlier, MOOCs are everywhere, right? Global knowledge everywhere. But there's something missing. And that missing element is the local organization. So this brings us to the emergence of platforms that re-territorialize engagement, that bring us together, peer-to-peer platforms. Okay, so the next important trend that's transforming education and learning is peer-to-peer platforms that allow for a network-based model of association. People can now go to the web and simply find groups to join that they can learn from or associate with, which they would have otherwise had to pay an institution for in the past. So one of these platforms is called meetup.com, and I've had the experience of working with this platform through the Footscray Maker Lab. Earlier this year, we established Arduino user group based on a survey that Antonio and myself put together and sent to people. And what people told us is that Arduino was the hot thing. They really wanted to get together around that. So we did it. And with the help of someone to anchor it, Miles Eftos, the group has been going for about 8 months, meeting regularly, and a number of people come together, share their knowledge about robotics and microcontrollers. So there's a few pictures from some of those gatherings. Now, meetup.com is not for education per se. It can be for sporting clubs and speed dating, but it does show how the network form creates opportunities for connection. Another example is called Trade School. Trade School is a peer-to-peer platform that allows people to exchange knowledge and create learning opportunities based on a barter system. It's non-traditional learning space where students barter with teachers. Anyone can teach a class. Students sign up for the class by agreeing to bring a barter item that the teacher requests. And there's about 50 Trade School chapters around the world. And each chapter coordinates the exchange of knowledge for barter items and services. And so they have a little few examples of how teachers and students trade items, barter items, using that platform. I like this one, LA. That's totally LA. I want an introduction to tarot card readings. It's one thing I found across Los Angeles, psychic reading places everywhere. Yeah. And yet they didn't want to ask me about their future. Okay. They want to get it from some, anyway.
Just use a debit card.
PayPal, instant. Yeah. You want to know your future? Here you go. Okay, WeTeachMe has been around for a while, many years now. Don't know exactly where it is. Is it local or? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. I think it is a Melbourne thing. It's been going strong for quite a while. It's cash-based, but also essentially a peer learning platform. And then there's, of course, Learning Agenda, which has just started. Oh, too quick for that. So the conjunction between the Global Knowledge Commons and peer-to-peer platforms brings us to the emergence of telepresence and holographic representation, instantiation, as a viable mode by which global knowledge can interpenetrate locality, and where locality can interpenetrate globality. Now I can go to my slide. All right. You know you're in a talk by a futurist when you have something like this, right? So, you know, we were all amazed by seeing Princess Leia be holographically represented by R2-D2. I think it was last year where the Spanish Parliament outlawed, and correct me if I'm wrong, public demonstrations in front of government buildings. So what protest organizers did is they said, we're going to protest holographically. So they projected, this was the first holographic protest that we've known. So the future may see some form of co-teaching, whereby there's the global teacher and the local teacher. The global teacher is the thought leader or the pioneer or expert or just a guest in any area. And they can be telecast or holocast into 1,000 local settings. The local teacher is also an expert, but importantly is a convener and a facilitator, is a relationship builder, helping a local group to engage with and apply knowledge. So we have new opportunities for the interpenetration of the global into the local, local into the global. But of course, there is no global knowledge without local knowledge. Anything we access was created somewhere by someone. Even the server is somewhere. So the idea of global knowledge is a little nonsensical. Doesn't mean that the global doesn't exist, so we shouldn't take it too far. I'm sure I'm on the planet. I'm quite sure. And the gravity thing seems real, and I've seen pictures of being on the planet as well. So, but the knowledge seems global. The knowledge seems global. Global is a surrogate word for accessible from many, many places. But there's also a so-what element to all of this. Sure, global knowledge, sure, peer-to-peer platform, but for what? So the third very important trend is the need to create radical sustainability breakthroughs for our communities and our planet. Practical problem solving. There's another holograph. We know at multiple levels our consumer lifestyles that we've inherited from industrial capitalism is fundamentally unsustainable. We produce too much trash for landfill, too much carbon emissions. We don't know how to deal with electronic waste. We're facing a climate crisis and associated uncertainties around water and a litany of other ecological sustainability issues. So by extension, we know that there's a need for education and learning to serve the need to radically redesign how we live and how to live sustainably, even redefining what sustainability means. And equally, to not maintain an education system that continues to produce the same mindsets, practices, and problems that form the matrix of our sustainability dilemmas. Thus, radical redesign. One of the interesting areas here is citizen science. Citizen science is really exciting. It's enabled by peer-to-peer platforms on one hand for participation. It engages citizenry from many different walks of life in getting involved in discovery and problem solving. CSIRO has an Atlas of Living Australia, and they provide creative tools that help anyone contribute their knowledge to the public, from citizen scientists to field experts to casual observers. And they provide elegant solutions for allowing people to record data. Some statistics on the Atlas of Living Australia. Climate Watch has or Earth Watch, I should say, has a particular project called Climate Watch, which is another citizen science initiative. And they have an app that you can use to track the movements of different species. So again, this is out of the classroom into the world, understanding how our world is changing, using a peer-to-peer platform for peer learning to solve a practical problem. One of my favorites is Foldit. Foldit is a... how many people know about Foldit? Foldit is one of the coolest projects ever. It was started at the University of Washington by many people, but I got to meet Seth Cooper in San Francisco at a gamification conference a couple years ago. And basically what it does is it's a game. It's an online game that allows users from around the world to fold proteins. And the way that he described it, computers are not as good as humans for folding proteins because the human mind has visual logic capability, which computers lack. So they crowdsource citizen scientists to actually find out how proteins fold. And they've been able to solve problems in weeks that have taken research teams years through that crowdsourced protein folding game, basically. And they teach you how to play the game as well through the software. So the challenges that we're facing compel us to go out of the box. We're facing so many incredible challenges. We got to get out of that box. And to address these challenges, we have to unleash a new wave of creativity, creative thinking, problem solving. Someone once said, sorry, this is going to be a bit cliched, philosophers have hitherto only interpreted the world in various ways. The point is to change it. But it is time. It is time. It's not just about learning. It is not about passive learning. It is about active engagement. So then the fourth is human values. Human values are at the heart of what education and learning is all about. Values are changing, and there's some very important trends in this area. There's been some really interesting research by a scientist named Engelhardt, and further elaborated by Hart and Tibbs, which tracks the emergence of what they call post-materialist values. Post-materialism includes the value of autonomy and diversity over authority, hierarchy, and conformity. Does that sound like out of the box? So according to them, there's a new desire for participation and self-expression, a movement from security to significance. People want to lead a life of meaning, a life of purpose. Purpose may be harder to find in a box. Depends on the box, depends on the searcher, but it's a thought. I've belonged to a school for the better part of a decade called Oasis in Hawthorne. And Oasis is very much a creative experiment in value-oriented learning. It's a search for a new type of agency, one that emerges out of relational inquiry. It's multi-transdisciplinary basis in the aesthetic, the social, ecological, and spiritual domains of inquiry. It's a movement towards holistic action, adequate to the new and complex challenges being faced by our world. As one participant said about Oasis, this approach requires action unlike any other social change movement of the past due to its multi-layered and intertwined nature and the sheer depth of our predicament. The point is that we can reinvent education and learning with a values orientation, and we must. We do not need to be limited by the neoliberal agenda's box for creating learning. We can be creative. So there are new values emerging. These aren't the only ones. We know that cultural polarization is also happening. We see, you know, statements by Andrew Bolt and others, and, you know, get the muftis, et cetera, et cetera. So, but there's an opportunity or a space to take our values, take what we deeply care about, and bring that into transforming what it means to learn. And I think that we need to do that in order to actually solve problems. We need to find ourselves deeply. And this really is what OASIS has been about. Relational inquiry is about self-discovery as we discover the world. As we discover the world, self-discovery. Okay, so now I'm going to get a little techie. How are we doing on time? Okay, so I've got about 15 minutes. So I want to talk about two things: cyber currencies, local credit systems, and maps and augmented reality. So the rise of global cyber currencies and local currencies, I think, are significant for a number of reasons. Does anybody own Bitcoin here? Yeah, got some Bitcoin? Cool. The futurists, of course. So the technology for cyber currencies like Bitcoin is already well established, for example, through the Bitcoin blockchain encryption. There's already local currency credit systems, time banking, LET systems, where people can exchange value in many different ways. The importance of credit systems should not be underestimated, that our current financial system will remain intact. Should be seen as a large assumption. Should be seen as an assumption that the way that our financial system operates today will remain intact. Indeed, if it was not for the injection of trillions of dollars to recapitalize the banks after the global financial crisis, we'd be in a very different situation than we are today. When Argentina was hit with a financial crisis between 1998 and 2002, defaulted on its loans, and it lost access to global capital pools. Let's see if I can continue to talk after. Yeah, water would be good. Okay, so Argentina went into crisis. Thank you very much. Between 1998 and 2002. And it went into depression, basically. Communities were desperate. And one of the things they created were local credit systems. I met one of the creators in Mumbai at the World Social Forum in 2004. Her name was Eloisa Rodriguez. And she talked about this credit system. It's called, they were called Talents. And what they would do is they would use community, they'd come together as a community and they'd find out, what's your talent? What are you good at creating? You've got chickens, you make eggs, you can sew, you can teach violin. And so what they created was a diverse local marketplace. And then they assigned each other credit, and then they traded that credit. And they had certain rules for accumulation of credit or how much you could accumulate, how much you couldn't accumulate, that sort of thing. So in situations of precarity, alternative credit systems are actually quite important. And I think that I gave a talk a couple months ago, and I mentioned this, and they thought it was fairly outrageous that I should be suggesting that they look into alternative credit systems because our financial system is not as stable as they might think. But I'm going to stick with it. I really think that the fundamentals of the global financial crisis have not been changed. They've remained relatively the same. So,
you have on
That's great. That's great. Okay, so TradeSkill seems to be successfully combining the peer-to-peer platform with bartering. So that's an example of combining the credit system together with the peer-to-peer platform. The other important aspect is that cybercurrency exchange mechanisms are being innovated. There's a system called Ripple, and Ripple apparently is a way to trade from one credit system or currency system to another. And according to Gartner research, it's on its way to application. So it's past the trough of disillusionment, and it's now close to perfecting the application as opposed to simply being hype, right? So what this means is potentially a local currency system could connect with another one, a global one, cyber currency system with some exchange mechanism. And when this finally happens, the value generated at a particular local level through a local credit exchange system suddenly has a way to escape, so to speak, and therefore the production of local credit begins to act like a national or indeed a global currency. But back to education, in conditions of rising economic precarity, there are many people who have a hard time getting meaningful work in the current economic environment. Many of these people are sitting on a lot of knowledge, a lot of life experience, and a lot of personal resources, both immaterial and material. The Victorian Trades Council has recently said, work is out of reach for a third of Australian workers. Casual and short-term contracts, independent sham contractor arrangements, and labor hire are all forms of insecure work, and they take a terrible toll of stress and financial hardship on the people stuck in them. Local credit and currency systems, in addition to cyber currency systems, offer a way for people to exchange value, and they can be seen as an important facilitator or mediator of new network-based modes of education and learning. People need to exchange value for services and products, but we need to find ways of going beyond our reliance on the cash economy as the only system of exchange. Okay, so now on to augmented reality. This is the last of the emerging issues and trends. Earlier this year, I helped to create a map called M3, the Maribyrnong Maker Map, which aims to make visible the diversity of makers in the local area. It was an experimental project aimed to see if a map could translate into community activation. Activation means people can use the map to connect and make something happen. I don't know if the experiment succeeded or not, but I had a lot of fun. And I met a lot of people, and now we have a map of lots of different makers, resources in the area. There's also layers. There's ways of finding different types of people. It's searchable. And we also made an attempt to map waste resources that could be used by other people in the area. And one of the team members, Amy Soika, mapped the entirety of Brimbeck Council and put about 20-30 pins in the Brimbeck area. So if you're looking for waste in the Brimbeck area, you can definitely find it. I can point you in the right direction. Okay, I'll repeat that. I'm not sure I agree with what you said. Okay, so I think that maps in conjunction with social networking platforms will help us to connect with those people in real time to create knowledge sharing applications. This map is not real time, doesn't track you via GPS. This is where I think augmented reality is the necessary connection with maps. Augmented reality allows us to experience an informationally embedded world. It can help us to navigate physical space in new context, or to interact with people in real time as we drop local area network pins as markers for others to follow or to learn from. Augmented reality and online maps, I think, can help us find the people around us who have the knowledge, experience, and abilities we need to connect with. It doesn't need to look like this. It can simply be a map. But the map can, you can have layers, and you could say, trade veggies, layer, boom. Who's in my area? Okay, let's go. I'm going to contact them. Then the social networking means you can actually make the connection. The map isn't enough. This is why the Maribyrnong Maker map is destined for obsolescence, or is already obsolete. because it's not enough to be able to find somebody. We need to connect with them locally. So I think augmented reality with social networking creates real opportunities for co-learning. Physical space is editable. Layers can be added. We can create locales of shared conversations, change projects, debate, or spaces of connection. We can use augmented reality to say, find us at this location where we're going to be essentially editing the space, editing our knowledge of the space. We could do Barclay Street. We could go up and down Barclay Street and say, we want to understand the street and how it's changed over the past year. We can embed recordings and data from the past into the present through augmented reality. So I think it is a powerful learning tool. I don't necessarily think it's ready, maybe, but I think that it offers some real opportunities. Here's one in Brazil, and this allows you to go to different sites and gives you some information about the different sites for tourists. Okay, so this is kind of the triangle I've been thinking about lately, which really is the conjunction of social networking with map/augmented reality with sharing exchange credit systems. I'm not saying it's the Holy Trinity, but I can't get it out of my head. So for now, I think the maps need to have the social networking component to connect, but I also think you gotta have some kind of sharing or exchange or credit system so that when people connect, then they have ways of exchanging value. And then the other important aspect of this is our cities are becoming thick with networks. So the city is an ideal locale for dynamic exchange. There's a lot of diversity all around us that we simply haven't had access to without these technologies. So I think the maps and augmented reality, the social networking, and the exchange mechanisms with potentially different credit systems open up a new opportunity for education. So that was my geek out on technology. Okay, so some final thoughts. There was a recent report by the Foundation for Young Australians which provided three dramatic forecasts. 44% of jobs will be automated in the next 10 years. 60% of students are chasing careers that won't exist. Young people will have an average of 17 different jobs. Sometimes this is how it feels looking at social change in the future, like a deer in the headlights. Another response to the future is to believe in the past as opposed to the future. Gonna have nostalgia, how it was all great. Or we could say there's only one future that exists. Put the blinkers on, and I'm only gonna go for that future. And of course, we're always stuck in the zeitgeist. There's always a spirit of the times that is going to essentially contour the way that we perceive the future. I'm also stuck in the zeitgeist, and so is this presentation. But I think that I like this metaphor out of the box. I'm glad I stole it from Learning Agenda. And I think that these new trends and new emerging issues bring us an opportunity for creating new futures. They don't say what the future necessarily is, but they provide a space where we can be creative. Futures for education and learning, out of the box and into the world. In this new configuration, education and learning can be empowered everywhere through global knowledge commons. We learn from the global laboratory of experiments in planetary sustainability, activated by diverse peer-to-peer platforms which bring many people together to both teach and learn, accessing deep wells of knowledge and experience in our societies and communities, and providing an avenue for their expression. Engaged in hyper-creative problem solving, redesigning our social systems at many levels in the context of planetary sustainability and community well-being. Education which is value-based, deeply connected to what we care about, meaningful, and which inspires us, and a contrast or challenge to the throwaway consumerism and an engagement with conscious consumption. And education embedded in experiential learning in the world, which twines both the physical and the virtual together. So out of the box and into the world. A lot of space for us to create the future. And may the foresight be with you. Thank you.
Jose, that was really insightful. For the Q&A, I'm wondering whether you like to make a circle. We just shift our chair around so we can look at each other. Yeah. All right.